Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Health Nuts podcast with certified holistic nutrition consultants Mary Vance and Caitlin Weeks. Our goal is to dispel mainstream nutrition myths and bring you the best in holistic health and real food education. So today's agenda is we have another great show, as always. Special guest Steve Wright of the SCDLifestyle.com, that's Specific Carbohydrate Diet, which I am a big fan of. I love that website. And he's also the host of Revolution Radio, Revolution Health Radio with Chris Kresser. And I also am a big fan of that podcast. So if you haven't heard that, go to Chris Kresser's website and find the archives on there because they have a lot of really great topics. So before we get into the nitty-gritty today, I'm going to read our disclaimer and then make sure Caitlin's there. Are you there, Caitlin?
I'm here.
Okay, good. So here's our disclaimer. The only purpose of this podcast is to educate and to inform. It is no substitute for professional care by a doctor or other qualified medical professional. This podcast is provided with the understanding that it does not constitute medical advice or services. Instead, we encourage you to discuss your concerns with a licensed healthcare provider. Caitlin Weeks and Mary Vance assume no liability for any of your activities in connection with this podcast. So now that that's out of the way, what's up with you, Caitlin?
Well, I'm still finishing my ebook, Mediterranean Paleo Cooking. It's we're in the final stages, so that should be out at the end of July.
After oh, awesome.
The designer gets done with it and everything. So I've been going to the gym a lot this week, and it seems to help a little bit with my energy, so that's something good. I'm cooking, as always, like all the time, taking pictures, you know, the life of a blogger.
That sounds pretty awesome to me.
What about you, Mary?
Well, I am really into this whole idea of treadmill desks and standing desks. I mean, everybody's been talking about it lately. I think our last podcast guest, Vanessa, has one, and I've been hearing many folks rave about them. So I fashioned myself a standing desk in my kitchen where that's basically my computer on top of a stack of books.
it's kind of janky. I saw it.
It's a little janky, but you know, I want to try before I buy. So I kind of march in place a little bit and do some squats while I'm working, and I have to say, I'm kind of into the whole idea. So
I think you could buy like an old treadmill and just make a desk that fits over it. I mean, I'm sure Steve could figure that out, but my apartment's just so small here in downtown San Francisco. I don't think I could fit anything else in here. So I try to stand up as much as possible.
Space is at a premium where we are, so I figure I can, and they're something like $1,500, and, you know, maybe in my next huge, glorious house, I can manage an exercise room, but for now, I have to report that I'm enjoying it.
What's new on your blog, Mary?
I have just been posting recipes and of course my love for gelatin. I wrote a post about the beneficial properties of gelatin and included actually one of your recipes for gelatin chocolate pudding. And my site, I think I've been redesigning it now, working with someone for almost a year, so hopefully it launches I think next week, but there's always something more to add, and I have an ebook coming out, so I have to find a time to get a page up for that, and there's always stuff that needs to be edited and finished, but hopefully the new site will be out soon and it'll be very new and improved.
Well, great. I'll help you get people over there. So I've been on my blog. I just put up today a slow cooker giveaway, and I'm gonna give away RC Vartarian's book, The Slow Cooker, Paleo Slow Cooking, and a Hamilton Beach slow cooker, so that's really exciting.
Wow, awesome.
So everyone go and register, and then I put up a Mediterranean chicken salad recipe yesterday it's not in my book, but it's that kind of, you know, gives you a preview of the type of recipes. I'm having all original recipes in my book, And also a pomegranate jello, also on the Mediterranean tip there. And today I made dairy-free chocolate popsicles, so that will be coming soon.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I'm excited to try the pomegranate jello, since it uses, of course, gelatin.
And real pomegranates, no juice.
Oh, wow, sounds life-intensive.
You kind of make your own juice, so I guess you could cheat and buy some palm juice, but
yeah.
But I use real pomegranates.
Yeah, that's so, right, because you're authentic.
Yes, straight from the Mediterranean region.
Oh.
So we are so happy to have Steve here. I met Steve at the Weston A. Price Convention in Santa Clara in November, and it was really great to meet him and, you know, put the face to the name and everything. And, you know, I want to just welcome him and have him tell us how he got into this whole health blogosphere and, you know, tell us a little bit more about his journey through health and everything.
Yeah.
Well, Caitlin and Mary, thanks so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for coming. We're psyched to have you on the show.
Yeah, me too. You guys are always posting so many good recipes. I just am not that good in the kitchen, I tell you what. I got into this because I was diagnosed like 5 or 6 times from various doctors over a course of 10 years with IBS. And I had for a while accepted that I thought that this was some sort of genetic thing. It was just something that I could power through, and I'd live the rest of my life being like, quote, the gas man, and having alternating constipation and diarrhea. But I took a consulting job in which I was traveling a lot, living in Chicago, really doing the happy hour lifestyle, and trying to work my way up the ladder, and things really got even worse. And so it got to the point where I was bloated for like an hour after eating so bad that the pain, like I couldn't work, I couldn't do anything. I'd have, you know, all night diarrhea, lots of constipation, and just all day gas, so much so that I actually got called into my boss's office because coworkers were complaining that I smelled so bad.
Oh my God, that's embarrassing.
Yeah, so I had these issues. I've been through the ringer with digestive problems, and my good friend from college, Jordan Reisner, who we run the site together at SCB Lifestyle, he was diagnosed with celiac disease, and the gluten-free diet only made him sicker. He never got any better, and doctors kept telling him he was doing it wrong and all these other things. And so he found the specific carbohydrate diet through another alternative practitioner. And it took him from having, you know, daily diarrhea like over 3 or 4 years, and it really stopped his diarrhea in 7 days. And then he started to turn around. And I mean, it's not like a miracle thing where he was like, you know, chronically ill for 4 years and then became a new person overnight. It was that, you know, finally the diarrhea just stopped. And so, he told me about this diet after he'd been on it for a little while, and that's when, before I even knew about paleo or Weston A. Price or any of this stuff, you know, he kind of challenged me one night because me and him both had these GI issues, and he's like, dude, look what this diet did for me. You have to try it. I know it's going to work for you. And so I did, and so I had, you know, all of this all-day gas and bloating, and by the third day of doing the diet, this stuff was gone. And, you know, the specific carbohydrate diet, it in my opinion, really is a therapeutic diet for those with digestive issues. And, you know, since starting the blog almost 4 years ago now, we've done some functional medicine training with Dr. Kalish, lots of other advanced digestive courses through the functional and naturopathic worlds that we could get into. And so it's been kind of a slow progression of, you know, myself starting with just diet and getting rid of symptoms to becoming fully healthy, and then turning around and blogging and consulting and doing my best to kind of share what's worked for me and getting me back to, you know, this amazing level of health that I don't even know if I've ever been this healthy. I just don't even think I ever felt this good.
Wow, that's great.
That's an amazing story. Yeah.
It blows me away that, you know, people so young like you two, not me and Mary, but you two, Steve and Jordan, get sick so young in your 20s. That just blows me away. I just can't believe that, you know, I think that's a testament to our food supply that, you know, I didn't get sick till I was, you know, like 32 or 33. So interesting. But anyway.
Yeah, I think I got some help from about, you know, a dermatologist who gave me about 4 years of antibiotics. So
yeah.
That and a couple other like extremely stressful college life definitely contributed.
Yeah, well, you...
Yeah, I mean, that's why this stuff is on the rise. I think even one course of antibiotics can alter your gut flora enough to contribute to some of these inflammatory digestive issues, and then couple that with the stress that we are all dealing with, just unprecedented amounts of stress, that these conditions are becoming so common.
So, Steve, what do you think, along the same lines, what do you think is causing these IBS, Crohn's, and all these inflammatory GI issues?
Yeah, I mean, this is like the $10 billion question. And back when I was sick, I wanted to know the answer to this so bad. I wanted it to be black and white. And I think what I've learned now with helping and talking to thousands of people and working through my own issues is that we're really on this big continuum. And these issues of IBS and Crohn's, colitis, all these GI issues, I don't think you can point your finger at one source. And if you trace your own history, for instance, if I trace my own history back, you know, could we blame it on 4 years of antibiotics? Sure. But was I also eating a bunch of GFS crappy foods? Yes. I was also eating a lot of sugar. I was also drinking coffee from sunup to sundown. I was taking 20 credit hours for 3 years in a row. And then when I wasn't doing that, I was playing sports all night. So, and then there was plenty of alcohol mixed in there. So, you can't necessarily, I think, in most cases, blame any one single cause for any of these illnesses or syndromes or diseases. But what I think typically tends to happen, this is what I see probably 90% of people I talk with, is you can usually work back in time and you'll find some sort of an event that was of particular trauma, things like divorces, breakups, abuse, car accidents, surgeries, PhD programs, all these different stressors. You find a really stressful event, and that typically is like the tipping point. And then when you have that stressful event, you stack on like a standard Western diet, a crappy diet, you stack in never having a stress-reducing program, doing a lot of intense exercise or maybe not even doing any exercise at all. All these factors almost start like this ball rolling down a hill. And then it's just typically it can be, a couple year decline, or maybe it's a 10-year decline before someone is finally willing to go to the doctor and say, hey, I'm having diarrhea 10 times a day and there's some blood in it. What's going on? And so some people, this ball rolls down the hill really fast in a year or two. And sometimes this ball can be rolling downhill for maybe 10 years or 20 years. And then all of a sudden we decide that our condition that we're living in is bad enough that suddenly we should get it checked out. And what we haven't realized is that for the past 10 years or something, we haven't had the energy. We've had acne. We've had headaches. We suddenly got diagnosed with asthma like I did out of nowhere, right? My senior year in high school, I never had it before. How does that just happen? Well, it's part of this, all these issues that add to this inflammatory condition. And as that ball just rolls down the hill, the inflammation just keeps on piling up. And then I think that's when we get these types of conditions.
I think it's kind of like Jenga, it's like that last little piece, that you put on the top, and then it's like,
that's a good analogy. And I know that I get so many clients that come to me, and they've been to so many GI doctors and had colonoscopies and had full workups and been through the ringer. And the doctors will tell them, I can't find anything wrong. I'm just going to diagnose you with IBS. Here's some prednisone or some steroidal medications. And that always breaks my heart, because they've tried everything and been through so much that stresses them out even more. And then they're just given medication on top of it. But
then they give them the soft foods diet.
Or they tell them, to eat grains and bread and cut down on fat and protein because it's hard to digest and it's really heartbreaking. But
yeah,
Steve, go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to talk to that for a second, because I think you're totally right. So you have all those things that are pouring inflammation in, right? And then you both know that as you pour in inflammation, it's going to take down your hormonal status. Your adrenals are going to start to go out, your sex hormones, everything's going to start to stop. And when that happens, that's when you get unchecked inflammation in the gut, and we lose the immune system in the gut. And that's when we become like these awesome human hosts to pick up bacterial infections and parasites and yeast infections. And then once you have the unchecked inflammation plus the infection, then you have never-ending leaky gut and never-ending inflammation, and just continues this circle of injury to the gut lining. That's when you start to see liver toxicity issues, all kinds of skin and brain problems. And so then it turns into this like really complex web of, again, there's no smoking guns here because everything is sort of interplaying with other things. But, you know, typically what it is like you said, it's just a lot of things rolling downhill, and then suddenly an antibiotic round or something like that happens, and bam, it just all blows up.
Yeah, and as Dan Kalish always says, you can trace every human health problem back to one imbalance or multiple imbalances in each of your body systems that you just mentioned, the hormonal, digestive, detox, and once all of those are imbalanced, you're really feeling crappy. But I want you to talk a little bit about flares, because, you know, typically IBS, Crohn's, and inflammatory GI issues are associated with flares, and anyone who has flares knows what they are. But explain a little bit more about what that is and what could trigger a flare.
Yeah, I'd love to. So so when I'm talking about flares, I'm talking about just like usually a worsening in your symptoms, but typically most people would report an extreme worsening. So you might have the occasional diarrhea, and all of a sudden you're having diarrhea 10 times a day, or you go from being slightly constipated to constipated for 2 weeks. And so how I like to talk about flares is what we call like this bathtub theory that we talk about at the SE Lifestyle site. And so when I was talking about the ball rolling down the hill, there's if you think about a bathtub and you think about the water level in the bathtub, think about that as the inflammation level in your body. And all these different actions, so every action you take, every thought you make, it's either going to be anti-inflammatory or inflammatory. And so if you're eating a junky diet, or if you're having a lot of stress and you're not dissipating it, if you're taking antibiotics, if you're taking, if you're in, you know, a bad situation with bad emotions, all these things are going to be dumping water into this bathtub and raising the level in the bathtub, which is raising the level of inflammation. And typically what tends to happen in a lot of people who get these flares, a lot of people with Crohn's or UC, is that they're barely kind of getting by, and usually with the help with some prescription drugs. And what's happening is that bathtub level is dangerously close to the lip. And then something happens, like a breakup or a bad day at work and your boss yells at you, or heaven forbid, the kids just aren't, you know, it's just a bad week with the kids. These are all things that just happen every day. But when your level of water is so high that it's right at the lip of the bathtub, and then one of these events happens, all of a sudden the water just dumps over the edge. You know, you just poured in more of this water and it dumps over the edge. And this is when you get into this flare situation. And this could be it's a very scary time. You know, I have hundreds of examples of people who got into this flare situation, did the best thing that they could, which is go to a hospital, and the next thing you know, they lost a colon. And then some people, you know, lose loved ones, because even those operations, you know, they come with risk, just like every operation does. And so, I'm really passionate about trying to educate people about what a flare is, and trying to make sure that your bathtub level, that the baseline inflammation level in your body, is as low as possible.
It's really life or death with some of the people you deal with, right?
Yeah, it really can be. I mean, when you're talking about somebody going to the bathroom 20 times a day and losing a lot of blood, you're talking about situations in which you lose all your electrolytes, you're losing hormone status, losing blood enough that you need transfusions. And so that's when you get in situations where sometimes – you know, GI doctors have to make the call to remove organs. And anytime we have a surgery, you know, there's just complications. There's always complications. It's just statistics. It's just how medicine works. And so, anything that we can do to make sure that you don't have that happen, I think is, you know, prevention is the best medicine. And so just being aware of these different inflammation triggers and keeping your water level low or your inflammation as low as possible, I think is the best route to go.
Is there anything you can do, like when you're in the middle of one of those episodes, that can stop the flare?
Yeah, of course. Jordan and I have built a whole product around this where we've put 20 to 40 people through several times just to verify that we could typically take someone from, like, say, 20 bowel movements down to 10 or less, or 10 down to 2 in 7 days. And so what I want everyone to know, the listeners to know, is that you have extreme power just within you without any prescription help. And but you need to think about it in three phases. You need to think about it from a diet perspective, a supplement perspective, and a lifestyle perspective. And I think the most overlooked one and the most powerful one is actually the lifestyle one. And people put a lot of and you ladies and I, we're always talking about these diets, and we put a lot of effort there. But man, I would say the best secret weapon against getting out of one of these flares is to really address any lifestyle issues, and then do whatever you can to get the most sleep you can, to laugh. Just laughing produces a cascade of healthy hormones and anti-inflammatory compounds. Take as many naps and do daily meditation or anything like that. Just you have to, like you said earlier, you have to address this like it's life or death. And if it means telling the kids no, or the husband no, or the wife no, or whatever you need to do, take a few days from work. I think the lifestyle is where so many people can make improvements.
Yeah, I know me and Mary have these, A-type successful San Francisco people. And they're
business women.
Yeah, and they never say no. And they stay up all night, working, and then, it's happy hour, and they're super everything woman to everyone, and they put themselves last, so we see that all the time, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, if your lifestyle factors aren't in place, I think these programs, it diminishes the success rate so much. But, what would your advice be for someone coming into this who could be overwhelmed transitioning from, kind of eating a junky diet to a plan that they might see as more restrictive?
So for instance, if you're starting the STD lifestyle version of the specific carbohydrate diet, or you're starting specific carbohydrate diet from paleo, you'd think that it is more restrictive, and it is in a way. My advice is that you look at it like a therapeutic tool. I mean, this is a short window of time, and you're trying to put all your resources, and I think by making a switch to a diet like this, you're kind of voting with your actions and with your money that fixing these GI issues is a number one or number two or number three priority in your life. And if that's true, then there's always going to be a curve of adoption. So even if you wanted to learn how to play a sport or learn how to use Photoshop, there's painful moments as you learn this skill. And I think switching to the specific carbohydrate diet, starting to cook your own meals, or switching to paleo and starting to cook all your meals, that is a skill. This is a life skill. And so there is a learning curve, and there are headaches. You will waste money on foods that you thought were legal, and then they turn out to be not legal, or you buy something that you think you can handle, and then it turns out you can't handle it, and then there goes $10 or $20. And so these things can add up. But that's the same thing as trying to learn how to be a good photographer and taking a bunch of really crappy photos over and over until you start investing in courses and better cameras and then Photoshop and all these different things. So I think, the best thing that I could tell people is to almost give yourself freedom to screw up and learn it, or look at this like you're learning a skill. Because you really are. This is something that you can use the rest of your life, and you could teach your grandkids or your kids or anything like that. And so I think people try to treat these diet changes like prescription drugs, and it's not the same at all. Prescription drugs are not – taking a prescription drug is not – or even a supplement isn't a skill. You just have to remember. You have to set a reminder on your phone. Learning how to eat different foods, cook these foods, buy them when they're ripe, how to clean up the kitchen. These are all skills, and it's difficult to learn them all at once, but I think if you just give yourself a little patience and keep your head on straight that you're doing this with the best of intentions, I think most people do all right.
You had to teach yourself how to cook, right?
Yeah, so the best thing I was good at was ordering pizzas, and I could make chicken breasts, like frozen chicken breasts. I was really good at that.
In the George Foreman or something?
Yeah. Well, I was even lazier than that. I would put them into the oven frozen, like eight at a time, because I hated cooking so much. And so then I would just buy pre-made salad and these frozen chicken breasts that I would cook like eight at a time, and I would eat that for several days in a row because I was so lazy with cooking. And then I started the specific carbohydrate diet, which on this diet at the beginning, you cannot buy anything from the store. You have to make everything at home. And And so, yeah, I was YouTubing everything, you know, Googling. It was quite the adventure, but I tried to look at it as an adventure, you know? Like, this is a new skill that I'm going to use the rest of my life. And so I think taking that attitude into it made it a lot easier.
Did you learn to love cooking? Because I have a lot of clients, I hear the same thing. They are asking me, just give me a plan. I can go to Whole Foods and buy it from the hot bar. And I like to have people really get hands-on in this stuff. And I think it helps you feel like you're nourishing yourself. So did you learn to love it?
Oh, yeah. I totally love cooking. I hate baking. Baking and cooking are totally different, in my opinion. I cannot bake worth anything. But I do love cooking. I love, once you begin to work with it over time, you start to, like, wonder, like, oh, can I chop more efficiently? Can I make this look prettier on the plate? And then you learn to figure out, at least what I figured out, is that when you buy the best quality ingredients and the best, like, fresh herbs and that kind of stuff, like, literally, it's foolproof. Unless you burn it, you can't make bad food. Like, yeah. When you use organic, real foods, I can't make a bad meal as far as I'm concerned. I mean, maybe I have a simple palate, but when I cook for others, they're pretty impressed too. And so I think we make cooking, like, there's definitely an echelon way above me where the professionals are making some amazing, bold flavors that I have no idea how to do. But when it comes to just making a pretty dang good dinner in a short amount of time, anybody can do that if you start with just a few techniques and buy the best quality ingredients.
Yeah, especially for the ladies. I mean, I think we've all been on low-fat and low-calorie diets all our lives. And so when you get to start adding fat in, it's like, wow, it's like food tastes really good again. So let's see. Tell us the difference. I think a lot of people, you know, are more familiar with paleo. Tell us the nuances and the difference between the SED diet and paleo.
Sure. So, excuse me. Hope you can edit that out. Sure. So, again, think of the specific carbohydrate diet as a GI intervention tool to kind of reboot your health and then move back to paleo or Weston A. Price after that as you get healthier and you want to expand your diet. So, the differences really come down to a few things. First, the specific carbohydrate diet does not allow starch, where most people these days on paleo are eating some sort of starch. And that comes down to this very crucial and basic tenet of the specific carbohydrate diet, that there's no polysaccharides or disaccharides allowed in the diet. And the reason why is that the small intestine has these little hairs, probably heard of them called, like, you know, shag carpet, they're villi, and they have to split carbohydrates, like di meaning two or poly meaning many, into monosaccharides before you can actually absorb them. And so the specific carbohydrate diet helps treat cases or problems like small intestinal bacteria overgrowth and yeast overgrowth by only allowing certain carbohydrates, and because those other carbohydrates, when the small intestine has an injury, they will not be able to be broken down, and they'll sit around in the small intestine and provide food for these unwanted creatures that we don't want in our guts. So the other big things is that the SED diet allows fermented dairy, so fermented, like homemade fermented yogurts, certain fermented cheeses, and also the SED allows properly, like, soaked beans or legumes. Now, at the SED Lifestyle site, we don't advocate for the use of legumes at all. I think that's more of like a Weston A. Price. And most people, the biggest thing that we tell them what to do is listen to their body. Like, try a food, even if it's SED legal or paleo legal or whatever legal, like, you eat it and observe what your body tells you. Create your own custom diet, because you can work within the templates of these various diets, but the reality is that you have your own custom hormones, infections, state of health, and you know, you have your own custom gut flora. And so there's going to be certain amounts of certain foods that you can't eat, even though I can, and we're on the same diet. So you know, kind of the tenet of the SED is to remove those complex carbohydrates, basically, you know, is the starch and the dairy thing are the two biggest things. And then SED doesn't talk about limiting omega-6 oils, but again, at SED Lifestyle, we try to educate our followers on that and get rid of those as well.
This is kind of updated version. just one more part B to that. What are some of the biggest mistakes you see people making when they first start SCD?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think a lot of people make one huge mistake, which is that they just look at the SCD template, they look at everything that's legal, and they just start eating it. And when they do that, they might be eating nuts or lots of nuts. You know, it's kind of a paleo fail as well to eat a ton of nuts. And, you know, people, even the best, healthiest people, kind of can't eat a whole bunch of nuts and really claim that they digest them very well. So I think a lot of people eat a ton of nuts. And then just by eating that whole template right away, what they're going to see is they're probably not going to see their symptoms reduced far enough. And they'll kind of wonder, is this working or not working? Whereas if you start in the intro diet, like we like to teach people at SCD Lifestyle, starting with the intro diet, which is really kind of like a scaled down, pretty restricted diet, and then slowly add in your foods, you build this custom diet and you really get yourself to what we call like your food safe zone. And this is really like a zone of foods that, you know, really treat you well. Probably some cooked vegetables, maybe a few fruits, and then meats. And then from there, try things like try your dairy, try your legumes, or try whatever you want to try. But as long as you have like this food safe zone and your symptoms are pretty stable, you'll know right away. Your body is your best guide. And so I think the biggest fails are typically eating a ton of nuts, not actually listening to your body, and then probably there are some people who kind of turn it into a high fruit diet, and that can lead to a bunch of issues.
That's from cooking laziness. What's next, Mary?
Well, I wanted to say also, I think, Steve, I don't know if you encourage people to do food journaling, but you were mentioning, I mean, what's right for one person isn't right for another. And obviously, as nutritionists, Caitlin and I are always talking about writing down what you eat, but that really helps you to trace back kind of how you're feeling and how foods are affecting you.
Oh, yeah, I would 100% agree with that. I mean, there's really fascinating. Like, I talk with people just like both of you talk with people all the time. I myself cannot remember what I ate 2 days ago. I don't even remember the portions or typically the sizes. So most people can't. And if you're not writing down how you felt that day, your emotions, your bowel movements, and what you ate, you're hardly ever going to be able to make these connections. And the other thing is that we know from the research that delayed onset allergies can typically – they can not show up until the third or the fourth day in some people. And so that's why we try to have people use a four-day rule. And so where you start to introduce, say, avocado on day one – and then keep the rest of your diet the same, but have a little bit more avocado day two, then have a whole bunch on days 3 and 4. And that way you know you're actually testing both, delayed onset allergies, but also the quantity of the food. And some people will react at various levels. And so you got to really give yourself a few days there. And if you're not journaling about that, you won't remember what happened.
Yeah, that's great advice, too. I love the sort of system down pat that makes it really easy for people, too. But, Steve, how long do you think it takes to sort of reverse and heal IBS? In your experience, what are you seeing with your clients?
Well, I think we have to define what reverse or heal or cure or all these terms actually mean. And I don't think anyone...
You can't say cure.
You can't say anything. But, I think everyone should define health or reversing, all that. That should be your own definition. Everybody has their own definition of what that means to be healthy. And so it starts with that. And, I'll just talk broadly from my perspective on what happened with me and what I'm seeing with my clients. But I think the first step that can happen really fast is symptom-free. Symptom-free and total health are not the same at all. But I firmly believe that anybody with IBS, Crohn's, celiac disease, ulcerative colitis, all these issues can be symptom-free fairly fast, somewhere in the 1 to 3 month range, very fast, where you're having really good bowel movements, energy's coming back, skin's clearing up, those types of things. But that's just step one. And I think humans become so accustomed to this new level of health that they forget how much pain they're in when they're having 10 bowel movements a day or couldn't go for 7 days straight. And so immediately my next step was like, okay, well, I still have some acne. I want this gone. And my energy's still not quite there. And I have a little bit of brain fog. And so healing the rest of these issues and like really bringing back total health in my perspective, that can take a while. That can take years. In my case, it's been it's been probably 3 years now I've been working really aggressively at it. And I think that can be really shortened for people who work with highly specialized and qualified consultants and practitioners. But that's where you got to really drill in and spend the money on testing. You got to get a look at all of your hormones. You got to get a look at, you know, your liver, your brain, your GI system. And that's when you have to like holistically take stock, because we say IBS, but IBS is typically the manifestation of an adrenal issue, a GI parasite, and sometimes in my case, you know, some brain chemistry issues. And so getting back to 100% health, whatever you call that, that can take a few, you know, that could take a year or two. For sure.
Me and Mary have perfect brain chemistry, so I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, well, I have eaten whole cartons of ice cream and many chocolate bars in one sitting and lots of bags of M&Ms, so I've had to work at it.
Well, we've never done that.
The fact that my parents sent me to therapy when I was 15 means that my whole family has great brain chemistry issues. But I'm all healed now, goodness of Whole Foods.
Yeah, it does help a whole lot to have a lot of good amino acids and fat to help balance it out as much as
possible. And a healthy gut to absorb it.
Yes.
Yes, yes. That's the key. You got to be able to absorb what you're spending all that money and working so hard on.
So, okay. Let's talk more about the stress impact. I know you and Chris talk about that a lot on your show. And then, of course, on your SCD Lifestyle podcast, I've heard several of your shows about stress, and tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, so stress can come in many forms. I think like just a generic definition would be kind of like an assault on your body in some ways. And so you can cause stress to your body through diet, through emotions, through physical traumas, surgeries, car accidents, abuse. There's lots of ways in which stress can come into your body. And like I was talking earlier about the flares, I think it's really an overlooked thing, and it's something that I continue to struggle with. I'm totally a type A personality, and I wish there was more hours in the day, and so I am always struggling with reducing my stress. Now, what I have done is I've gotten rid of the food stress. I've gotten rid of the physical stress that I used to do, and now I think the biggest unchecked stress that we have in the Western world is this we're inundated with all of these electronics, with this go, 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 Jones's mentality. You gotta, you know, build the business, gotta take the kids to 47 different activities and then cook and then, you know, do everything. And so the biggest thing is that when this is happening, you're really going to be stressing your adrenal glands, which is your cortisol levels, and you'll also be taking out kind of other hormones that are made in the adrenal glands. Specifically, the one I think that impacts everyone the most is the loss of DHEA production. And so over time, as we stress our bodies and we don't take time to recuperate, to meditate, to go into yoga, to go on vacation, but not those vacations where you have like checklists where you have to see every site, but like literally just go in the woods or go on the beach and sit and read a book or something. When we don't do these things, we tend to really cause a hormonal dysregulation. And so I think the biggest area where most people are still not seeing the health that they want is after they've made a switch to paleo and they're doing the right type of exercises, that they still think that they're immune to, you know, checking their phone when they wake up and right before they go to bed and doing 67 things throughout the day and not taking time to really sit and just breathe and relax.
Oh God, I fantasize about taking a vacation and not checking my email for a whole week and not looking at my text messages. And it's weird. I mean, I feel like my whole life and business would fall apart if that happens. But what does that say about us as a society if we can't do what I call eye detox, you know, where we've talked about this in past podcasts about the importance of getting back to what we're meant to do as humans, which is not sit for 10 hours a day staring at our little screens.
Yeah, I think we have a heck of a paradox. You can take a look at the European countries, countries like Spain, who have mandated 6-week vacation times in like 35 or 38 hour weeks, I forget. But, you know, they restrict these things because I think they know deep down that part of part of just being happy, healthy, and alive is having that time off, having that social interaction. And I'm not saying that we should adopt Spain's policies, because there's no way that we'd all achieve as much as we are. There's no way America would be as dominant players in the business world if we didn't work 90-hour work weeks. But I think we should definitely take a book and look around at other countries and how they're functioning, and try to, you know, the biggest thing that I'm trying to do in my life is make simple rules. Things like, I won't check my email from my phone in the morning, or I will close my browsers, you know, when I go to bed at night, so that when I pop my computer open, the first thing that doesn't come up is my email. And, you know, put a reminder in your phone to meditate for 10 minutes or 7 minutes or whatever you can handle, you know.
Now, one thing I've found lately is that the Meditation Oasis podcast, it's free and they're all about 15 minutes. And you can just play it through your earphones. And it's just great to have that break and, you know, make myself do it 3 or 4 times a week. And it's just kind of leads you through it. So you don't have that voice of like, I can't do this. I don't want to do it. You know, kind of holds your hand.
Yeah, I think also like, you know, what I'm starting to notice, and I bet other type A's can totally relate to this, but when the world, like when stress levels are just at their highest and the world seems like it's crumbling around you and your to-do list is like 7 pages long, that is a time in which if you can recognize that trigger of that feeling, that's when the time when if you can just stop for like 5 or 6 really long, deep breaths and look at the paint on the wall or the blades of grass in nature or the cars you're driving by, whatever you're looking at, just every time you get that sense, if you can just take those deep breaths, you can really sort of reframe what you're feeling and what you're going through at that moment in literally like 10 to 20 seconds. And so starting to do that has also really helped me.
Yeah, that's – I love the idea also of doing that in the minute that you're feeling so overwhelmed and your to-do list is growing, because that really actually helps to – rewire or reset that stress mechanism in your brain. So that's a great reminder. I like that, actually. I want to talk about testing, though, because, you know, there's a lot of different labs out there. And what kind of testing do you specifically recommend, you know, for people to get started on with, you know, adrenal testing, GI testing? Talk a little bit more about that, please.
Yeah, so this is something that I'm pretty passionate about, because before I, you know, before we were anybody and we were just blogging and like 10 people were reading our blog, I was spending thousands of dollars on all different types of tests from many of the lab companies in the world. And so I just want to start by saying that I spent a lot of money on tests that turned out to be worthless. And so I'm passionate, but I also know that I'm kind of sensitive to certain lab companies. And I don't feel like businesses are out there just trying to make crappy products or crappy labs. But what I found through, and what Jordan and I have found through not only our own money, thousands of dollars of our own money, but now working with over 200 clients in advance, you know, seeing their results of their advanced testing, is that there are certain companies who shine through with the most accurate and best results. And so those, that, you know, as far as I'm concerned, this is summer 2013. This could totally change, you know, a new ownership, new changes in the market. You never know when this could change, but right now, when it comes to saliva hormone testing, I don't think there's a better company than BioHealth. And they've just been the most reliable matching symptoms to actual test results. And so if you had to put your hard-earned money towards any sort of hormone testing, I would definitely do the saliva hormone testing through BioHealth. And that could be things like the BioHealth 201 for adrenal status, or maybe the 208 for female hormone status, those types of things. And then when it comes to the GI system, we've been pretty vocal about this. And so we have over 150 data points now, including ourselves, in which we took multiple tests in the same week from various companies. And there's two standout labs at the moment, BioHealth 401H and the Metametrics 2105. Both of these are stool tests, and they're checking for parasites, bacterial infections, and even when we've done these, you know, 150 tests or so data points now, 90% of the time there's a variance. Either one lab comes back blank, the other one comes back filled with bugs, or both of them come back filled with one bug each, but they're a different bug. It's just remarkable. And I think what we're really seeing when we get all these crazy data points is that stool testing technology is just not as advanced as we'd you know, hope that it was. And we use the BioHealth 401H because it's a 4-day sample size. It's a culture testing technology that's been around for a long time. There seems like a very good lab at this point. But we back it up with the Metametrics lab because they use DNA PCR. And so there's always issues with culturing and with humans. You know, it's good to eliminate variables. And so using the DNA PCR, it's supposedly, according to Metametrics, 100 to 1,000 times more sensitive to these bugs. And so the issue with that test, though, is that it's a 1-day sample size, and we don't pass parasites or bugs from our gut in our stool. We don't pass those on a homogeneous fashion. So we might pass a whole bunch of them on Monday, none on Tuesday, a few on Wednesday, a lot again on Thursday, and none the rest of the week. And so if you just by chance take that test on the wrong day and you just get unlucky, you might get a false negative. And so we usually – you know, if someone wants to work with our clients, we advise everyone to do both tests at the same time just to back yourselves up.
Wow. I want to make a comment about that, too, because I get a lot of clients coming to me with lab tests in hand that they run through their doctor's office, and it's usually like a standard LabCorp test and nothing shows up on it. And, you know, that speaking to accuracy, you unfortunately are not going to find the quality and the caliber of BioHealth and Metametrics in your doctor's office, unless you're working with an integrated practitioner. And those LabCorp tests that they might give you in your doctor's office are really not accurate at all. And then, you know, I can't tell you the number of people I've worked with that have clean LabCorp tests, and then we run a BioHealth or a Metametrics, and they show up with H. pylori and parasites and, you know, other bacterial overgrowth. So I think, like you said, Steve, it's really important, even if you feel like you've done every test under the sun, if you're still not feeling right, then there's something going on, and the more information you can find out, the better.
Yeah, and I would echo what you've seen so far is that I would say that almost, you know, every person who comes to us with Crohn's or UC can produce some sort of stool testing that was done on them in the conventional setting, and these tests are just they're not good enough. I don't know why they're not good enough. You know, I'm not a stool. I don't know all the intricacies of creating the best stool test. But what I can tell you, just from a practical perspective, is that they don't work for catching the bugs. And what does work is using these other tests. And so, like you said, if you're suffering from this health condition or these health conditions, and you want to get more information on exactly what the root causes are, unfortunately, I wish it was cheaper. I wish it was easier. But, you know, we can only work with the technology that these companies have created. And I think right now that's the best system that I know of. And that's the system that most of the most advanced chronic health practitioners are now using.
I wanted to know also this, some of the tests, you know, they test for a lot of things, but there seems to be some confusion about, or it's not clear to me anyway, what is the best test for SIBO, or do those tests that you've just recommended cover that, or is it the other one, the one that, you know, with the P test, what's that one called?
The Metametrics Organics test.
Right. That's our technical term, everyone, for that test. It's the P test.
Yes.
The P test, yes. Not the P on the stick test, the other P in the cup test.
And also, just for those who aren't sure, SIBO is an acronym for small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, and that seems to be making quite an appearance. I've worked with a lot of folks with SIBO. So that's a good question, actually.
Yeah, great question, and I'm glad you brought it up because there are some misconceptions. So, for instance, one of the misconceptions is that the BioHealth 401H and the Metametrics 2105 show a marker for candida or yeast overgrowth. It would lead you to believe that if you showed a negative on one of these tests for yeast overgrowth, that you do not have a yeast issue. However, I have not seen that to be the case. And when I've talked with these labs at a higher level, what they say, they don't, you know, they're not saying one way or the other. And I have seen positive for yeast on these tests. But what they will admit is that the solutions that the stool travels in are solutions that are encouraging or stabilizing growth of bacteria and parasites at sometimes the expense of yeast. And so I don't buy into the idea that the stool testing technology is the best testing technology for yeast overgrowth at all. I do buy that the Metametrics Organics profile, either the comprehensive or the dysbiosis one, is the right test to check for candida overgrowth or yeast overgrowth, because you're actually checking the metabolites or the byproducts from those organisms in your urine, because we do absorb those and then, you know, they pass through the body and out into the urine. So when it comes to someone who's having a lot of GI issues, we will run those two tests that we talked about earlier, the 41H and the 2105, and then followed up with the organics test as well for candida as well as for SIBO. Now, I think the two best tests out there, and this also comes right from Dr. Allison Seebecker, one of the, you know, one or two best sources for small intestinal bacteria overgrowth on the planet right now. I'd say maybe Dr. Pimentel is number one, Dr. Seebecker is number two. And she uses a 3-hour lactulose mannitol test. It's a breath test. And that's the golden standard right now for small intestinal bacteria overgrowth. It will actually give you certain levels of the growth and kind of can tell you some specifics on the type of bacterial mix that you have growing in you. So that's the golden standard. However, the organics acid test from Metametrics does check for the metabolites of the small intestinal bacteria overgrowth, and it will give us indication that you do have it or you don't have it. So in other words, it gives you enough info to let you know that you have it or you don't have it, but it doesn't give you all the info that the breath tests give you. And again, because small intestinal bacteria overgrowth happens in the small intestine, typically or it is known that the stool testing is not effective to find SIBO. And this is also typical of the candida issues, is that typically the candida or yeast infections will be higher up in the GI tract and typically not shown in the stool testing.
Is the lactulose mannitol something they can get at the GI doc?
A lot of GI docs are starting to carry them, actually. It's pretty cool that you're seeing a lot of even conventional doctors start to become known about the SIBO problem. And so you definitely can get it through sometimes you can get it through your GI doc. Most integrative medical practitioners will have access to one of the labs. So, you know, I definitely try to get access to that test if you think SIBO is an issue, or use the Metametrics organics test.
If you're looking at your Metametrics organic acids test, what markers would be high for SIBO, indicating SIBO?
I don't have the test. I don't have an example test in front of me, but anything in the bacterial overgrowth, if any of those markers come back high, that's a positive for some sort of bacterial overgrowth. And it's, you know, Metametrics even calls it small intestinal bacteria overgrowth at this point in time. So I can't remember the metabolite specific names as I don't have it in front of me, but any positive in that category of high, you know, a high return will indicate SIBO.
It's a bad sign.
Do you think SIBO exists by itself, or is it typically a secondary infection letting you know there's something else going on too?
Yeah, typically SIBO and yeast infections, candida specifically, are co-infections. So sometimes they are the reason why you're having all the symptoms and you have a latent parasite or dormant other infection. So I'm not sure if, you know, the SIBO or the candida is the root cause of all the symptomology issues. But yes, I would say that in a large majority of the time, what I see is typically some sort of co-infection with another parasite, H. pylori, bacterial issue. And H. pylori one's extremely common.
You had that, right?
Yeah. So I definitely had positives for H. pylori, Indolomax nana, and candida. So.
Did your GI doc see the H. pylori, or did you have to do that separately?
Nope, I had to do that separately through which test came back positive for that finally. The Metametrics 2105 finally came back positive for that. And I say finally because this is another fascinating case study, being myself, and I just want to get this out there. But there's this idea or thought about crypt hyperplasia, which is this idea that you have these crypts, which are like, it's easiest to think about it as the opposite of villi. So the villi stick out in your small intestine, crypts kind of stick down. And there's these thoughts that these infections can either live in biofilms protected for a long time or in these crypts kind of walled off because of mucus or inflammation or some sort of issue. And as you heal, you break up the biofilm or you unplug these crypts, and all of a sudden these dormant infections become you're like your next biggest issue, even though you treated these other issues. And so that's actually what happened with me. I have 3 years of multiple high-end stool testings, even with these lab testings, showing that I don't have H. pylori. and then bam, one comes back positive for H. pylori. And so it's pretty fascinating to see this. And, you know, Dr. Kalish tells lots of stories about this, where he has clients he's working with, you know, over multiple years for IBS issues. And, you know, there's no infection, or there's like one known infection. They treat that, and all of a sudden, there's two or three other infections. And so people should definitely be aware of that. I think it's wise, after you've eliminated an infection or done some sort of treatment program, always retest 8 weeks later, and then plan to retest again for maybe the next 2 years, you know, just yearly, just to make sure nothing came back. And I can say that after I went after my H. pylori and verified that it was gone, you know, I definitely gained another level of health. So it was an issue for me. And so I think that's totally interesting. I don't quite understand how it happens yet, but it's definitely happening in some people.
You definitely learn something new every day in this field, right?
No, I'm really glad you brought that up, Steve, because you're right. If you've been eating junky and then you switch to gluten-free, dairy-free, and your gut starts to heal, those infections get kind of flushed out, where they can be, you know, they're more live and are able to be picked up by those lab tests. And, you know, that used to stump me too, is someone would have major GI issues and their tests come back clean, and I'm sitting there going, there's got to be something here. But that's a really good reminder to, you know, continually retest as you heal.
Well, we probably want to wrap up, right, Mary?
Yeah, I guess it's coming. As usual, can sit around and talk about this stuff for a long time. But before we wrap up, Steve, tell us, you know, so a little bit for everyone listening out there. What do you say to the person who feels like they've tried everything and they're still not getting better? And, you know, what are your words of encouragement?
My words of encouragement are, I've been there. Man, I've been there, and it sucks when you're in that kind of lull and you just feel kind of hopeless, and you spend a lot of money on supplements and prescription drugs and doctors and practitioners and consultants, and that sucks. But you just got to think about the fact that you're never going to say quit. You know, you got to keep getting back up, and you have to just have this knowing deep down that you're going to find the next answer. So there's a reason why the one treatment failed, or there's a reason why you found the first practitioner, maybe to lead you to the next practitioner, to lead you to the next practitioner. And just know that there's just, if you keep taking action, if you just keep walking forward, as hard as it can be, even if it's so dark you can't see where you're going, if you keep walking, you're going to walk into the people that need to be in your life that are going to help you get this figured out. And that's exactly what happened to me. And I think that's pretty much what everyone who has these chronic, mysterious illnesses and problems will report, is that as long as you keep walking forward and you just keep having faith and cut your losses when you're doing something that's not working, and being open to the next idea, you will figure this out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's a great way to wrap things up today. That's really inspiring.
So tell us where we can find you again, Steve, all your websites.
So we just have one website, or I guess we have two. We have scdlifestyle.com, and then we have our scdlifestylebook.com, which is just where you can buy our ebook that tells you how to do the specific carbohydrate diet, you know, buy the right foods, take the right actions like food journaling and calories, and how to cook all these foods from scratch in case you're like me and didn't know how to cook. And then we also offer other products. Like, we have a new flare support product where we've, like I was talking about earlier, we've put many clients through this, and, you know, typically we can get at least a half reduction, if not a full reduction, in someone's flare symptoms in 7 days. And so it's a pretty awesome product. I'm very happy to finally get that off of my computer and out into the world.
It sounds awesome. And you make sure and listen to Steve's podcast on iTunes. It is really informative. And you'll make sure and leave me and Mary a review on iTunes and share this podcast with your friends. We really appreciate it. And thank you so much for listening. And check the show notes for any products or links that we've talked about today.
Yeah, thank you so much. I think Caitlin and I both learned a lot, and it was, you're a great guest. This is a really informative podcast. So thanks so much for taking time
We can always help have you back for part two.
Yeah, I would love to. Thanks so much for having me on, and I could talk about this all day, and I would love to come back and talk about anything, including that, you know, that sugar addiction and overeating and that complex illness, because I think that's definitely not talked about enough, especially, you know, including guys who don't talk about it. So,
well, we will get to the rest of the questions next time. And anyone who has questions, submit them on our contact me forms on me and Mary's website. Mine is grassfedgirl.com and Mary's is maryvancenc.com. And you can, of course, find us on Facebook as well. Thank you so much. We'll see you again soon.
Thanks. Bye-bye.